Thank you, Dr. Miller, for the introduction. It seems that every time I go somewhere to give a talk, the room both gets quiet and empty right before I start. I'm not sure if I should take that as a sign or just that dry stuff is sometimes not as sexy, if you will. So today I want to talk about a few related items. These are part of a big research enterprise we have at the Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation in Seattle, where we are audaciously attempting to track and monitor death and disability and risk factors, expenditure and efficiency due to all causes of disease, injuries and risks in every setting, well, every country throughout the world, and doing this longitudinally and repeating it every 12 months so that we have an up-to-date set of results. Once we have that information about what those health problems are in a context-specific, from a context-specific perspective, we might be able to then identify what are the unique health challenges, health problems, and health successes in each unique setting. Then, I'm going to get into a little bit about the work we've been doing in terms of being able to track performance of those health systems. So just because one country or one hospital is doing better than another in terms of outcomes, does that actually mean that they're a higher performing hospital? Or to put it another way, if we all know that the quality of care can vary from one place to another, if they're both equal, does that mean that they're actually the same? And how can we use that information to then set targets? And what sorts of approaches can we use to evaluate how well and how efficient that those systems are running? And then finally, most of our big projects we put up as online visualization tools, and all of the underlying data and sources and code used to make the analyses are available online. So I'll give you a few links for those. So health patterns are complex, as we know. They can vary a lot by age, by sex, subnationally within a country, even as we saw yesterday, by different neighborhoods within an individual city. Risk factors that lead to those diseases also vary a lot by subpopulations, by different demographic factors. We don't necessarily claim to have perfection. In fact, we definitely don't have perfection, but we're making a stab at making such information in a highly standardized fashion, such that all the analyses are performed on the same data set. They're all internally consistent and include the entire time series from 1990 to the present. And that's the Global Burden of Disease Project. It allows us to figure out what are the actual changes in rates, what part of those changes are due to demographic and epidemiologic changes, and what how do those deviate from what we might have expected on the basis of other background social and demographic factors. With that, we can then start to identify more precisely the successes, challenges, and potential failures. So the Global Burden of Disease, little shout out, we will be publishing the GBD 2015 results October 7th. There's an entire issue with The Lancet that's going to go through all of the detailed methods and sources and findings for all of the various parts of the project. In 2015, we included over 300 different conditions from 1990 to the present by 20 different age groups, males and females separately. 195 total countries and territories were included, and the bar for inclusion was they had to have a population of at least 50,000 with a long string of high-quality vital registration data. And for 11 countries, we looked at them on the subnational level. Those were Brazil, Japan, the United States, Mexico, South Africa, Kenya, India, China, and three more. I can't remember off the top of my head. The final metric of all of this, we calculate deaths, we calculate prevalence and incidence, and then we use those deaths to calculate years of life lost and years of life lived with disability. And then the math is actually fairly simple. We do this once you get all of the geographies, all of the causes, all of the different demographic groups, and then we repeat every calculation 1,000 times to get uncertainty. The actual scope and size of the data set is massive, but most of the arithmetic is pretty simple. YLL, years of life lost, are the number of deaths at a given age multiplied by the standard life expectancy at that age. And YLD are the number of prevalent cases, or incidence times duration, times the disability weight that was derived through a very large general population survey of comparative health states. And then you add them together and you get that complete picture of health loss. To put it in a different way, for those who aren't familiar, here's a conceptual picture of what YLD and YLL are. You have a person who, during childhood, had asthma that was mostly well controlled. Then when they got into their 20s, had a major road traffic accident. Improved somewhat after that before developing diabetes and Alzheimer's and death. So each of those illnesses contributed YLD, but then at the time of death, whatever remaining life expectancy, that would all be counted as YLLs. So we did this for GBD 2010, for 2013, and for 2015 we've tried to take it a step further to understand and disentangle the trends. Levels of health are strongly correlated with age and sex. Different older people are at risk for different conditions than younger persons and women might be. Age standardization helps account for those changes in population age structure. Levels of health, we know, are also very strongly correlated with a number of other factors. And for GBD 2015, we developed a single measure called the Sociodemographic Index, using the same methods as the Human Development Index to match each country and territory and subnational location with a certain index value for what their overall fertility, educational attainment, and per capita income were for that year. Having this single measure allows us first to see what are the overall sort of ecological correlations between development and disease rates. And it's far more predictive than just a single measure, which is very common in global health and a lot of other analyses, which is just looking at income. In some cases, such as diarrhea and a lot of infectious diseases, it explains a lot. In some, it doesn't. So interpersonal violence is one example. And many injuries, in fact, have a very oddly shaped relationship between non-linear shape between SDI and the outcomes. Then when we look at the difference between, this is the world's population's experience at this SDI level and the certain outcomes, whether it be deaths or DALYs or YLLs or YLDs, how much does this individual location actually deviate from that? So we're not trying to imply that SDI explains or it certainly is causative, but that correlation can be very helpful. So here's how we I'll take one step back. Each location is on a scale of 0 to 100. So it's not just binned into quintiles. It's a continuous scale of the index. But for simplicity, we also bin them into quintiles, and this shows the different quintiles in 2015 as part of the project. And you see down in that, in Brazil, there's actually quite a lot of variation subnationally. Within China, even there's quite a bit of variation subnationally. In Hong Kong, for example, and Brasilia are both in the highest socio-demographic index quintile, whereas many of the other locations within those countries are not. And even within subnational of Kenya, which is kind of pixelated so you can't see as well, there are a few locations that get quite a bit higher in that SDI. So for all causes and for each subset of causes, we performed a set of basically linear spline fits between the age-standardized and all-ages DALY rates, the death rates, the YLL rates, YLD rates, and did it at the most disaggregated level so that that relationship could be derived for each individual condition. So the all causes together example is on top, and the relationship between SDI and the group that includes sexually transmitted infections, hepatitis, and other infectious diseases is down below. And you see there's differences in the slope, but the relationship is fairly similar. And that average rate at any level of SDI is used to derive what we call the predicted rate on the basis of SDI. But the difference between where a given geography lies and what their actual and the predicted could be that gap between observed and predicted. And we can actually learn a lot, we think, from that. So here's a few examples of how specific groups of diseases might vary quite a bit. You have cardiovascular diseases. You see that initial ballooning. Males are on the left and females on the right of each plot. For cancers, there's also a gradual increase and then a very rapid decrease in YLL rates, whereas for TB, HIV, AIDS, and other infectious conditions, that decrement with increasing SDI is rather continuous. If we look and combine all causes together, YLLs on the right, or YLLs on the left and YLDs on the right, we see that there's a very sharp decrease in total YLLs, but at most levels of development, YLLs are the dominant form, and so mortality is the dominant cause of health loss. But you do reach this point around an SDI of 0.8 or so, where you actually have equivalency, and disability and death are actually causing equal amounts of the total health loss. And then if we take an even higher view and just look at the difference between observed and expected, we see that some countries are, even though they have higher DALY rates and higher rates of overall health loss, are actually doing better than might be expected. Examples being Ethiopia, China, Peru, whereas some, such as South Africa, Botswana, Russia, and the United States, are doing actually quite a bit worse than would have been expected on the basis of SDI alone. So we can also look at this in more detail. Those predicted relationships between SDI and outcomes are averaged over the entire time period. But if we look at just a given country in isolation, this being Mexico, we see that initially in 1990, on the top, the expected burden was quite a bit lower than the actual observed burden of disease. By 2000, that actual Mexico disease burden had decreased quite a bit, especially for causes of death, and was even lower than expected. But there was a lag then from 2000 to 2013, whereas the SDI continued to improve, but the overall health measured in YLL did not improve at the same rate. And we can use some of these visualization tools to help explore, you know, what might have been the drivers of those differences. And this is a screenshot from the online visualization tool of GVD Compare, where I'm just limiting to what were the causes where there was a statistically significant increase in age-standardized DALY rates between 1990 and 2013. And once we have this information, then we can start diving further down and see, you know, what's going on with CKD, what's going on with atrial fibrillation and other endocrine diseases, maybe interstitial lung disease, and really start highlighting what are the priority areas to look at in Mexico. So once we have that information, then the next question is, you know, what is even achievable? We have these broad and ambitious goals in the Millennium Development Goals that have then been replaced with even more ambitious and broad sustainable development goals. And are these targets even achievable? Because it's really important, you know, when we go through our learning or any sort of goal setting in life, you have to have these intermediate steps along this way, intermediate targets. You can't expect someone to be able to hit a hole in one every time they step up and try to play golf. So one of the ways we can do this is through benchmarking. And benchmarking can be done by saying, you know, based on what others at your same SDI level have achieved, what might even be possible for you? It'll provide information about whether another place or population has achieved that level, but it doesn't necessarily tell you much about the tactics that you would need to get there. And here's, and you can compare countries, or you can compare just subnational units with a similar SDI, and something similar potentially could be done to develop subnational socio-demographic analyses even within the United States. Once you've compared and selected yours, or once you've selected your set of comparables, then you can actually look at what is possible. And so here's an example of Mexico. In Mexico, all of the dark colors are potentially reducible based on the current SDI of Mexico in 2013. What's interesting is that even though Kenya has a much higher disease burden overall and a much higher rate of infectious maternal, neonatal, and communicable diseases, a larger proportion of their disease burden is actually avertible than that in Mexico. And this really can help with context-specific goal setting and saying, okay, well, we want diarrhea, pneumonia, and other infectious diseases to improve. What is actually a reasonable target and a reasonable time frame we can set for ourselves? And once you have an idea of what's theoretically possible, which is almost never actually achievable, there are a lot of different elements that go into the ability of a health system to actually deliver those results. Some are how much spending is happening. Some is the stewardship capacity, how responsive is the administration and the policymakers and the overall stewards of that health system. And then another big part that I think a lot of us, is a sphere a lot of us work in, is the actual day-to-day health system efficiency. How well do we identify the patients who need to be identified, get them the treatment they need, and have that throughput with maximal intermediate output with minimal complications. The resource question is one that's often certainly controversial within individual countries, within individual governments. But if we look just at what is the potential ability to pay and what is the potential investment in health, we can look no further than what have other countries done. And so we looked in this case and several of the other examples that will follow, we started looking at child health expenditures and outcomes and see that as GDP per capita increases, there's a generally linear increase, though it doesn't match that frontier line, of the health spending per capita. In understanding how well does the health system respond, I'll come back to stewardship in a few minutes. There are several different elements that feed into that. So one is, what is the simple technical efficiency of the providers and the system? But also, what is the overall efficiency of the system to produce effective coverage? Not only do you have penicillin, but are the right people getting penicillin to treat their syphilis? And then even further than that, what is the efficiency of producing the health outcomes? Because to a certain extent, I don't know that anyone really cares whether or not syphilis is treated with penicillin. They just want people to not have complications or die from syphilis or pass it on. So if syphilis were completely asymptomatic and no problems, then maybe that wouldn't matter as much. So looking at how does the system produce those health outcomes. And as we're developing the ability to do the first, the second two of those, the effective coverage and the health outcomes, is one where we have to continually go back and assess how well different systems are performing. So to look at the technical efficiency, we developed an ensemble model. And an ensemble model basically means we combined different statistical approaches together. And part of the reason for this is that there's a lot of labor theory and econometric theory about how you should model and simulate factories, but there's a lot of controversy about whether or how those same models might apply to healthcare. And one of the approaches we've used to try to balance between those is using this ensemble model that uses the econometric parametric approach and stochastic difference functions to look at that. And we surveyed 600 health facilities in Zambia, Uganda, and Kenya, and found that, not necessarily shockingly, technical efficiency is low in many facilities, but the actual range of that technical efficiency is quite variable. And if we take those context-specific, even within a country, what is potentially achievable compared to peers, we see that just through increased technical efficiency, there's a lot of potential to increase, and this is one example that was looked at in the ABCE project, is how much could ART coverage be increased just by improving that technical efficiency. So how do you actually approach this? You know, in any system, there's a lot of different tactical options. It's really important to do some ex ante, some prior modeling and assessment. You know, cost effectiveness studies are a great example of this. To look at what might be successful in different settings given the various different prevalence and mortality rates of different conditions. National Institutes for Health and Care Excellence in the UK has been very good at this in helping match up resources with places where they're needed. And that divergence between the prior modeling and the effectiveness and then the assessments afterwards can help, couple of things. It can help inform how well countries are doing, but the divergence in a lot of those studies also shows that there's some more intellectual work and statistical work done to develop standardized approaches. An example of that is in the early 1990s, HIV treatment was projected to be ineffective, where the only thing we should invest in is HIV prevention, and that clearly has been shown to be not the case. And as we continue to monitor, both with those ex ante assessments and the ex post assessments, we can use that divergence also to understand how well the stewardship of that given health system is serving the needs of that health system. And that can then subsequently help target different sorts of policy interventions aimed at improving stewardship and accountability. I'll skip over this, but this is one example of the work that we've done to evaluate an impact evaluation of child health expenditure. And the big finding is that we see that cost per death averted for child deaths increases with time and also increases rather sharply with income. And we're going to look into doing similar approaches for a number of different causes. And take a step back. So I started with the whole GBD and then I narrowed in on ART and just child health. So how is this all going to come together? Well, if we can start, and we're starting with the United States healthcare spending, if we can start understanding, you know, where the money comes from, who it's spent on, how does it flow through the system, and then what causes does it target, we can start to do the same sort of analysis to do impact accounting across all the various diseases and work that into a normal update cycle of the GBD so that we would have then a way to have that constant impact accounting, the ex post assessment, to then help constantly reinforce our ex ante assessments and keep accelerating progress forward. So here is a list of some of the tools that I took screenshots of during this talk. For the code geeks out there, you can actually download the Ensemble Efficiency Model code on the GHDX, which is a great resource for global health data of all shapes and sizes. And when our new studies are published on October 7th, that link, the GBD compare is going to be also updated to include all of the newest results. So thank you very much for your time and attention.
Thank you very much, Nick.